Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here today. As always, happy to be here with you all on this lovely weekend day. Yes, I know. It's so wonderful where I'm at right now, even though I didn't exactly have a hurricane come through. It was nearby. We just got the winds from it, sort of, just on the outer bands of it. So far, you know, nothing's been damaged, so we're good with that. Still waiting for a tree branch to come down that was loosened up, of course, but you never tell with those things. Anyway, the Silk or Joe Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, so I want to thank them for allowing this program's continued existence just as much as Mother Nature does. You know, sometimes we Main Street Radio Networks and their clients don't approve of what we say. Sometimes Main Street Radio Network itself doesn't say that they approve, but you know what? They support the First Amendment. They support our right to say what we say, even if they disagree with it, so long as it's within certain federal guidelines, FCC stuff. So we want to thank them for their tolerance, their patience, and their patronage over the years. And you can show them some support. Go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You can find out more about the Silk or Joe Show up there. You can find out about the Al and Nathan Show, which I sometimes guest host. All up there, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. You can find where the podcasts are for the shows up there on that website. And you can also find us on social media, some posting that happens there occasionally. Heck, I posted on this on the Main Street Radio Network's Facebook page earlier this week, as a matter of fact. It's over at Facebook at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. They also got a Wimkin page at Main Street Radio Network. They're on X at Main Street Radio. And let's not forget the Al Nathan Show has its own X page at Al Nathan. I mention them because, again, sometimes I guest host for them. And if I do, you'd find out on those on X at Al and Nathan, or on the Main Street Radio Network social media outlets as well. But we also have our own for the show, GetterGETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. That's where you can find, when I remember to post, or when I have time to post, that's where you can find out about the show. Because usually I try to post the day of. You can't really schedule posts in advance on that website either. So if I'm not able to post the morning of, well, too bad. Anyway, getting on to what I want to talk about on this program today, you know, Breitbart was reporting how there was this, lately there's been this survey done or whatever of the Democrat Party, and they found that they've lost 2.1 million voters over the last couple of months, I guess, and 2.1 million registered voters, which, you know, it's not a good look, right? Here's the headline study, you know, I had the headline loaded, and then the page jumped down on me. Study: Democrats losing registration race in all 30 states that block or that track party affiliation. 4.5 million voter swing toward GOP. That's interesting, because where'd that 2.1 million figure go? Because on the Breitbart main page, it says Democrat Party shock, lost 2.1 million voters or registered voters in 30 states. So where'd it get 2.1 million? To 4.5 million. I must admit, I did not read the headline in the article. I read the headline on the link to the article from Breitbart's homepage. So that's a rather interesting thing. But it says that it's fueled by Trump's gains among young voters and Latinos in 2024, with more new voters nationwide deciding to choose Republicans over Democrats for the first time since 2018. Uh-oh, that's not good. If y'all recall 2018, that's when Republicans were, there was not a blue wave for sure, but Democrats did win the Senate in they won the House in 2018. So this might not mean much, actually. So here's a quote here from the article. Of the 30 states that track voter registration by political party, Democrats lost ground to Republicans in every single one between the 2020 and 2024 elections, and often by a lot, the report reads. That four-year swing toward the Republicans adds up to 4.5 million voters, a deep political hole that could take years for Democrats to climb out of, or to climb out from. Again, I was quoting there, so I want to get the quote accurate. Oh, I guess it's the New York Times that was doing this poll. No wonder they're so concerned. Yeah, actually, California, of all places, is down. Yeah, some of the surprising states in this appear to be, based on this map, California, Oregon, and New York, seeing declines in Democrat love, and Maine as well. Interesting that Maine would come up. Maybe I'll get to them in a moment. But, oh, here we go. Here's the quote. All told, Democrats lost about 2.1 million registered voters between the 2020 and 2024 elections in these 30 states, along with Washington, D.C., that allow people to register with the political party, the report adds. In the remaining 20 states, voters do not register with a political party, and Republicans gained 2.4 million total voters in this registration here. Here's another quote. Many blue states like massive California register voters by party, with many red states, including Texas, do not. So the number of nationwide registered voters by party does not tell the full story. Of course not. And on pins and needles here about what's going on in Virginia during this election cycle. But interesting that the state of Minnesota isn't in this list, right? Because weren't we told that that crazy nut job who said that he was acting at the behest of Tim Walz in his assassination of two members of the Minnesota state legislature, two Democrat members, weren't we told that he was a registered Republican? But he was registered in the state of Minnesota, which does not register you by voters. Do they think we'd forget? Well, most of the population has forgotten and just labeled him as a whack job or totally forgotten that that assassination happened. But we've had a lot, you know, how many news cycles ago was that? But some people have long memories. Some people have long memories. Certainly people who listen to this show might hear my periodic asides when a couple of neurons in the back of my brain fire and say, hey, remember how this story contradicts what the official narrative on this story was? Yeah. So somehow, even though this Minnesota does not register people by party, and I did some research at the time and could not find any evidence that Minnesota ever had registered people by party, we still have these reports out by outlets like the New York Post saying that the guy who shot who murdered two Democrat state legislators in Minnesota was in fact a registered Republican, when such registration was impossible in the state of Minnesota, as further evidenced by the fact that this New York Times piece here indicates Minnesota is not a state that registers people by party, even though I'm pretty sure the New York Times was in on this thing saying the guy was a registered Republican. So they just have this article here contradicting reporting that they would have done earlier this year. You guys got to really, you know, get on this. You need someone who has a long memory. I volunteer myself. Give me $2 million and I'll do it for you once. And then I won't work a day for the rest of my life, because I will squirrel that stuff away in assets so fast. Anyway, but the other thing that I wanted to get to was about Maine in particular. Not really wanted to. I'm rather ambivalent about it, but just so happened to come up in this topic here because Maine is one of the states that lost registered Democrats. And actually, it's like, hold on. Yes, Massachusetts is one of the states here on the map as well. Deep blue Massachusetts. Didn't I talk about them and their gerrymandering on the show last week or the week before, about how they got it so gerrymandered that these giant Republican districts that should at least yield one congressman end up being divided into two or even three separate districts, even though it doesn't look quite logical how it's being divided. But whatever. Anyway. So Maine also is seeing a drop in Democrats. And now we have this other headline, also from Breitbart. DNC crisis. Major Hollywood Democrats to hold fundraiser for Republican Senator Susan Collins. I mentioned how I posted on Facebook earlier this week. This was one of the articles that I posted about. Susan Collins, here's the quote from the article. Susan Collins faces a tough re-election battle in a vulnerable seat. Democrats will be fighting hard to win in the 2026 midterm. So the senator's decision to court liberals indicate that elements of the party fear a hard-left candidate of the Zorn Mamdani variety winning her seat. Here's another quote from the New York Times. The fundraiser will be held in the home of Sherry Lansing, a former Paramount Pictures chairwoman and prominent liberal donor. That's interesting. Another quote, Ms. Lansing's home in the Bel Air neighborhood is a mainstay in the philanthropy and Democratic fundraising circuit, hosting the lights of Lieutenant Governor Elena Kunalakis of California on her patio, which opens to sweeping views of Los Angeles. Miss Lansing is set to co-host the event with Casey Wasserman, the sports and entertainment mogul and chairman of the Los Angeles Olympics Organizing Committee, which is handling logistics for the Summer Games in 2028. Mr. Wasserman is a longtime Democratic giver as well. So what are these Democrats doing with Susan Collins? Why wouldn't they just fund their own darn candidate? Tickets to the reception range from $3,500 to $10,000, by the way. So that's quite a bit of money. But why would they court Susan Collins? Why wouldn't they just try to homegrown their own talent over there in Maine? Do they just not have anybody? Are they that scared of their voters that they have to turn to the Republicans and turn to a somewhat, I wouldn't say moderate, somewhat left-leaning Republican, as opposed to trusting the Maine elections to their own voters who they're afraid will go nutso? It's rather interesting what that says about the Democrat Party, especially what the major donors think of the party and its voters. I guess more of this top-down decision-making that has alienated so many people from the party. More Silver Joe Show after this break.
Everyone's using it, but not everyone is talking about it, and that's AI in the workplace. Kelsey Warren, founder of the Seamless Coach LLC, shares why many employees say they're keeping this, along with their feelings about other technologies, to themselves, and what business and IT leaders can learn.
According to new research from Cox Business, 60% of Gen Z and millennials feel positive about the growing role of AI at work and use AI tools for everything from summarizing meetings to creative brainstorming. But about half of both groups are nervous to admit how much the role of AI technology plays in their productivity. Fear of job loss and uncertainty about companies' AI policies factor into employees' hesitancy to speak up. The survey also revealed that despite being confident in their ability to adopt new technology, nearly 70% feel overwhelmed by the number of tools they're expected to use at work.
For more information and to see the full survey, visit coxblue.com/workplace-tech-survey.
On November 13, 2022, four University of Idaho students were brutally murdered in the quiet college town of Moscow, Idaho. Within the devastated community, questions and fear abound. A new documentary series on Prime Video, One Night in Idaho, The College Murders, investigates this shocking event to uncover the truth. The twists and turns of what happened after the murders, an explosion of online digging, a cross-country manhunt, a dramatic arrest and a looming trial made this one of the most talked about stories in recent memory. This was a case that captured the country's attention and fed its paranoia. It was one of the highest profile stories of the last decade, and it created a lot of social media sleuths who tried to find answers. One Night in Idaho, The College Murders delivers enlightening details from those involved in and affected by the crimes and explores the continued impact and fallout. One Night in Idaho, The College Murders premieres July 11th only on Prime Video.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches. all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. And, you know, I think my laptop knows that I'm about to talk bad about Microsoft because, well, I tried to type in a note about what I was talking about in the last segment involving Susan Collins. It decided to correct Collins to the name Bradley, whoever that is. And then earlier, I was trying to type in someone else's name, and it corrected it to something else as well. And that was in the search bar for Windows, so I'll still power through the segment regardless of what my laptop thinks. We are joined now by Michael Lucci. He is founder and CEO of State Armor, which helps individual states secure themselves against global threats. He has been a senior policy advisor to State Policy Network and a senior tax advisor to Platt Institute. Mr. Lucci previously served as a presidential appointee on the Federal Services Impasse Panel and as the chief of policy to Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner. Michael Lucci, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on. And thank you for addressing this topic of Microsoft, which has a near monopoly position in some products. They need to be doing more to protect our national defense rather than bringing in Chinese engineers to maintain Pentagon data systems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they didn't even bother to tell the Pentagon about that at first, that the contract the Pentagon signed, it had this detail in there about something called digital escorts. It was this part of their security plan. And they did not mention that that would include, among the non-screened personnel that were mentioned in it, engineers based in China. You'd think that would be something you'd tell the Pentagon, of all people.
I think that would be the number one thing that you would tell them. Imagine it in reverse. Imagine that CIA computer engineers were maintaining the computer databases for the People's Liberation Army of China, and that this was justified somehow on the Chinese side because they had, you know, there was a Chinese person kind of watching what these CIA computer scientists were doing to the Chinese cloud systems. It would never happen in that direction, but that's exactly what happened here. And it's like what you said, they created this program to have people without technical expertise monitor the computer geniuses from China who are creating our cloud systems and other software systems for national defense. They're not even telling the Pentagon about it, and that's the new news, is that the security plan they submitted to the Pentagon did not disclose that there were Chinese nationals in China building and maintaining these software systems for the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm. With, as you mentioned, not competent oversight, or at least oversight that's not competent to the task that they would be needing to do.
That's right. And that's just a loophole or a workaround because, of course, it's not legal to just have Chinese nationals in China maintaining our military systems. And so what Microsoft did, it's kind of this cute little program where they're like, well, really, the person with access is this digital monitor, this digital escort. Well, that person doesn't actually have the computer expertise or the security expertise on what China might be able to do, what their abilities are. And so you have someone who has a security clearance on the American side, but not the technical expertise to suss out any threats, quote unquote, monitoring the computer genius from China, who's probably tied to their government, who's undoubtedly under pressure from their government to put malware into our systems. It's an unbelievable thing that Microsoft is abetting and letting occur and putting into our systems. It has to stop. There needs to be an investigation. They need to be losing contracts over this because it needs to be a standard that if you're bringing the enemy inside the wire, you're not inside the wire anymore yourselves.
Mm-hmm. And as someone who has flunked out of computer science degree programs, I can safely say that the average layman, even if you have a security clearance, won't be able to tell what the heck was being coded by these. Even if it was an amateur Chinese hacker, just the average person out there wouldn't be able to tell what the heck was going on with the coding.
Of course not. I mean, having a security clearance doesn't mean that you are a computer expert or a cybersecurity expert. It just means you're trusted in certain ways and you're accessing certain things on our side. It's really unfathomable, though. Think about this. The Chinese government and their military knows that there are people in China who are Chinese nationals maintaining the Pentagon system. What do we think the Chinese government's going to do with those people? What do we think the Chinese military and the party state is going to do with those people? Just leave them alone to keep maintaining? China is a bigger cybersecurity threat than every other nation combined. And we're not we, Microsoft is bringing their people into the Pentagon in a digital sense. The Chinese government's going to know about it. The Chinese government is going to make sure to be visiting those people and making sure to get those people to put into our systems what the Chinese military wants in our systems.
Mm-hmm. And this also raises the question about if Microsoft is willing to do this to the Pentagon, what are they doing to consumers? This mandatory Windows 11 upgrade coming at the end of the year. Well, what's in Windows 11 that we should be worried about? What was in Windows 10 that we should be worried about?
Well, there are experts on these issues. So Dr. Rush Doshi, who worked for President Biden's National Security Council, has testified that Microsoft turns over the source code for these products to the Chinese government. So that's a top national security official testifying on the record that Microsoft is just turning over the source code. Now, there's another law in China that's very interesting. It says that if you, Microsoft or any other software company, if you detect a security flaw in your products, you must notify us, the Chinese government, before you notify your customers. You have to give us really first right of refusal to abuse and exploit that cybersecurity vulnerability before you tell your customers. And there's this crazy quote from Microsoft in the last month where they said, well, maybe this actually created a problem that allowed the Chinese government to hack our customers more. Of course, that's what's happening. I mean, that's why China has these laws. And so it's really a question, could Microsoft possibly be this naive? Or are they knowingly introducing security threats to the United States?
Mm-hmm. And also knowingly cutting into their bottom line, because we know what China does with this data. They just create their own systems based on whatever we're told to fork over to operate in China. And then they sell those at a much cheaper price than the American product.
They indigenize our technologies, which is they make it native to China, which is what you're describing. They undercut us within their markets, and then they go to undercut us in global markets. So we're really turning over the crown jewels of American ingenuity to a country whose government means ill, openly wants to hurt us, and is using our own technologies against us. It's a moment of insanity that needs to stop. Our technology companies need to stop building up technology in China. And of course, our technology companies need to stop bringing in Chinese agents into the Pentagon.
Yeah, that just seems absolutely absurd. And I mean, was there any rationale on Microsoft as to why they thought, even with a digital escort who has no idea what the heck they're doing, this would be a good idea to go over? I mean, would they do that with Russians if Russia happened to be the country with the best computer folks at the cheapest price?
It's somehow China has skated past where they're not getting the security scrutiny that the Russians would get, that the Iranians get, as you mentioned. Microsoft has a program like this with the Europeans. Okay, that's very different. Those are treaty allies to the United States, but we still should be looking closely at what's happening. Microsoft has a program like this with India. Okay, it's not a security ally, but, you know, we generally are both democracies, and we could get along in a lot of different ways. Having this program with China is just insanity. I mean, they shouldn't be having Chinese engineers touching any of their systems, let alone the Pentagon systems.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael Litchi, appreciate you being on the show to talk about this. We've about 15 seconds left. Where can our listeners find out more about State Armor?
State Armor is our website. At State Armor is our Twitter feed. We're all over these issues and fighting this fight against the Communist Party.
All right. Thank you for being on the show. And listeners, you can go check them out. We're coming up to a break, but more Silk or Joe Show on the other side.
With summer in full swing, a new survey is making waves and raising eyebrows about what really happens in America's swimming pools. The 2025 Healthy Pool Survey finds nearly half of swimmers admit to regularly rinsing their dirty feet or sandals in the pool, turning it into a communal foot bath. Three-time Olympic gold medalist and swimming safety advocate Rowdy Gaines urges swimmers to think twice.
This isn't just gross, it's dangerous. Chlorine is meant to kill germs, but it can't do that as effectively when it's overloaded with, say, dirt, sand, and other contaminants.
In response, the American Chemistry Council and Pool and Hot Tub Alliance are raising awareness of how swimmer habits directly affect water quality.
Everyone plays a role in pool safety. You may be tempted to dip your feet or flip-flops in the water, but find that nearest shower and rinse off there instead. That small step can make a big difference in keeping pools safe and healthy.
Learn more at healthypools.org.
According to the U.S. Army, nearly 50% of military recruits come from rural areas, despite less than 20% of the U.S. population living in those communities. This strong representation highlights the deep tradition of service rooted in rural America, a connection that one company is uniquely positioned to celebrate. Marty Scold Jordan, executive director of the Tractor Supply Foundation, explains about her company's Hometown Heroes program to honor and help.
Tractor Supply knows our active military, veterans, and first responders pay an incredible price for protecting us and keeping us safe. These are our everyday hometown heroes who have answered the call. And so the Tractor Supply Foundation is awarding $100,000 grants to 10 organizations that support these heroes. In addition, we're honoring local hometown heroes in our stores nationwide and offering all hometown heroes everyday savings and exclusive benefits through our Neighbors Club.
To learn more about the Hometown Heroes program, go to tractorsupply.com/hometownheroes.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. So, getting into the topic of losing votes, I'm just going to focus on the state of Virginia here because that's where I live. So I mentioned in the opening segment that the Democrats over a kind of a net loss of 2.1 million votes, while Republicans had a net gain of 2.5 million from recent registration tallies, right? And one of the states, though, that wasn't counted was Virginia, because Virginia doesn't have a party-based registration system. You can just register to vote and then later on decide what party you're in by voting in whatever primary, I guess. So you can't really tell what happened in Virginia. I do know, I guess, that there's 32,000 federal workers that live in the state based on a recent commercial by the Democrat governor candidate, who is trying to tell us that 32,000 federal workers losing their jobs is important somehow. Yeah, they're talking as if this is a major civilian job loss or something, as if the counter-Republican candidate for governor should have been doing more to protect those federal jobs, right? So I'm not really so sure about that myself, because the federal government downsizing, they're trying to say it's somehow not a boon to the taxpayer, that federal employees who almost unanimously voted to kill hundreds of thousands of energy sector jobs deserve our sympathy, that federal employees who pass regulations making it impossible for small businesses to thrive are worth our caring about. Like, if I lose my job, not a single Democrat or bureaucrat, no difference really, will care. The IRS will still show up at my door with guns blazing if I don't pay taxes to fund the government jobs. The IRS has its own SWAT team. And had last I checked, this was 10 years ago, so it's probably changed, they had 2 million rounds of ammunition to their name. And this Democrat CIA operative running for governor in Virginia is telling me these people were entitled to my taxpayer dollars all along just because they exist. I get nothing when I lose my job, but they still get what little money I have, even if the voters don't want them there? Really? The job is somehow their personal property that they can rob you in order to fund. That ad will play well with Democrats, because this is what Democrats believe. Government employees are holy. They are the bishops of the party or something. You are filth that pays tribute or has tribute forced out of you, while federal employees, just by virtue of being granted a job with the federal government, are the clean and pure in society. That's the message Democrats are sending, but I've talked on this show about this before. Remember when Democrats a few months ago had their Share Your Story campaign? They wanted people to share their tales of woe and misery. It wasn't for abortion survivors. It wasn't for angel moms. No, it was not for pipeline workers whose jobs Biden had killed. Nope, none of that. It was for federal employees making six figures by stealing money from you at gunpoint. Liberals are placing the bureaucracy above all else these days, because I guess that's all they have left running the government, aside from the courts. There was another development, too. Liberal judges in the Sixth Circuit Court have destroyed the Congressional Review Act. I want to get to that in a moment here, but I just want to emphasize that that's actually part and parcel of what liberals are doing these days. Now that they're out of the government, you know, they don't control the House and Senate, questionable about that, really. They control as much as Republicans let them control, which is probably a lot more than they should. Certainly a lot more than Democrats let Republicans control when they, 4 years ago, were in the same position. So, but the power base of the Democrats right now is the bureaucracy, where they obstruct the Trump administration. The power base is these judges that were appointed under Biden and Obama, who obstruct the Trump administration. That's where their power is concentrated at. And now you have liberal judges in the Sixth Circuit Court destroying the Congressional Review Act. So what this act did is that if some bureaucrat, one of the ones that they want you to feel sorry for that they lost their job, if some bureaucrat in the executive branch passes a rule Congress does not like, then Congress can repeal the rule if the president signs off on the repeal. But do you know what the Sixth Circuit Court came up with? They said neither Congress nor the president can override a bureaucrat in the executive branch. Granted, that is literally what we had as a government in the Biden administration, but it's the least democratic and most unconstitutional thing you could do. So all these Democrats saying we are a democracy and Trump is a danger to democracy, they believe that elected representatives and an elected president are subservient both to 677 unelected district court judges and unelected anonymous bureaucrats. How's that democracy? Let's do a little thought experiment. Unelected judges and unelected bureaucrats disrupt a Democrat Congress and a Democrat president and claim their power supersedes that of the Democrat president and the Democrat Congress. You don't think the word insurrection would be plastered across every media outlet? As if you needed proof. Here we have proof that Democrats do not believe in democracy. They believe in power for themselves. They cheer when this happens. It's the hashtag resistance. Never mind that the people voted for this government. Democracy only counts if they win. Never mind that the party has lost 2.1 million voters. It only counts as democracy if the Democrat Party is winning, even if it means unelected bureaucrats and unelected judges overturning the will of the people, even if the people are within their rights legally to do what they're doing. They actually believe 677 unelected judges and unelected bureaucrats should have no accountability just so long as the Democratic Party is being served by them. Somehow that is democracy, even as their party has lost voters. Again, in every state, as I mentioned in the opening segment, every state that has registration by party, Democrats lost voters. And they lost the election last year, so they're still hemorrhaging voters after that. But still, they think that it's democracy if their unelected bureaucrats and unelected judges are running the country instead of the elected leaders. You know what? At this point, I'm almost at the fight fire with fire mindset. Let the Democrats' precedents stay. Let the bureaucrats and the judges run things. But then replace every last bureaucrat with a Trump supporter and every last one of those judges with a Trump supporter. Then when Democrats win again, just block everything they do. We already lost our republic. We know Democrats will not hesitate to secure their power even more next time they are in charge, based on what they're doing now. It's a race to the bottom of authoritarianism, and the only option we're left with is which tyrant do we want, is how that's looking from down here. Because what is, unless the Supreme Court actually tries to rein in these 677 judges, or unless this Sixth Circuit Court's decision about the Congressional Review Act is struck down. But these are, again, these are the bureaucrats that we're supposed to feel sorry for in the state of Virginia here. Oh, 32,000 of these people lost their jobs. 32,000 people who can run your life and do anything they want without Congress having oversight and without the president being able to do anything about it. Because what started this thing about pity the bureaucrat? It was the president downsizing the government. Whether it was bureaucrats who didn't want to play ball and do what his administration wanted them to do, or whether it was bureaucrats who just were there, had no real purpose except to soak up taxpayer money, they were fired. And we're being told that that was a terrible thing. Oh, how dare you fire this person who has no real purpose anymore in the government? Or how dare you fire this employee who is not doing their job that they're supposed to be doing because they don't like the president? It's democracy, apparently, that the bureaucracy can ignore the elected president and do exactly opposite of what the president wants done. That's what they are telling us, that that is somehow democracy, and that needs to be defended. And now you got the Sixth Circuit Court ruling that says the president actually has no control over the bureaucracy. The president can't do anything about it, even if he wanted to. They can do whatever the hell they want to do if they're employed by the federal government. And the president is, I don't know, was it like a popularity contest? Like freaking American Idol, where you text in your vote to win? Is that what the presidency is? According to the Sixth Circuit Court, that's what the presidency is. And I guess Congress too, because what can they do if a bureaucrat decides to make a rule? According to the Sixth Circuit Court, they can't do jack about it. There's no check or balance there, not from within the executive branch and not from outside the executive branch. I'm surprised, quite frankly, the Sixth Circuit Court then just outright say even the courts had no authority over executive branch personnel. These bureaucrats are above the law, just like those 677 district court judges that can stop everything from foreign policy to, at this point, I guess even what tie Trump chooses in the morning, because there's been very little to check their authority. And even with the authority checked, they still continue onward. Look at Judge Boasberg, for example. He ruled that Trump can't deport these Venezuelan criminal gang members that Trump was deporting. And yet Trump deported them anyway. And the Supreme Court said that Boasberg did not have the authority to say that Trump could deport these people. So what does Boasberg do? He holds Trump administration and officials in contempt for what? For violating an order that the Supreme Court said he had no authority to issue. How ridiculous is that? He issues an order. He's told he does not have the authority to issue the order. And he holds people in contempt who violate that order that he did not have the authority to issue, according to the Supreme Court. But nope, that ain't going to stop him because he's a judge and he's lower than the Supreme Court, but he was appointed by a Democrat, so darn it, that means he has the authority to do what the hell he pleases to do. He's a power unto himself, just like every single bureaucrat according to the Sixth Circuit Court ruling. How do we have a functioning elected democracy if that's the case? If any judge can do whatever the heck they want, if any bureaucrat can do whatever the heck they want with no oversight, no accountability. But Democrats, for the moment, this is where their power base is. These bureaucrats that we're supposed to feel sorry for when they lose their jobs and who try to get us fired. These judges who are not elected, they're appointed. That's where the power base is. So that's where democracy is, or according to the Democrat Party, who lost elections.
Looking for a career path with strong pay, room to grow, and real impact? The U.S. energy industry is growing fast with a need to fill 32 million jobs in the next decade. Gabriela Colon is a recruitment manager at National Grid.
When people think of energy jobs, they picture engineers or skilled trade professionals like electricians and technicians. We've got plenty of those jobs open, but we also need professionals in areas like IT, communications, finance, cybersecurity, and more.
You don't need industry experience to pursue an energy career. Ignacio Estella is SVP of Talent and Innovation at AvantGrid.
Our industry values skills-based hiring and provides on-the-job training, making it accessible for those with a strong work ethic and a willingness to learn, even without a college degree. Whether you have a GED, a PhD, or something in between, there are opportunities in energy.
Visit getintoenergy.org to explore different career paths and search openings.
A critically acclaimed docuseries returns to Prime Video with a compelling and powerful new chapter. Shiny Happy People, A Teenage Holy War, reveals teenagers being exploited, manipulated, and converted into soldiers to make America a Christian nation at any cost. The three-part series focuses on the controversial organization Teen Mania, once America's largest youth ministry, which attracted millions through their wildly popular stadium shows. Teens filled colossal stadiums, sang religious rock anthems, swore purity oaths, and embarked on culturally questionable global missions. But beneath the wholesome illusion lies a darker undercurrent. Brutal spiritual boot camps and relentless psychological control, all under the command of a charismatic leader with endless ambitions. The previous installment of Shiny Happy People, which unveiled the truth behind the Duggar family, was the number one most viewed documentary series on Prime Video. Don't miss Shiny Happy People, A Teenage Holy War, now streaming on Prime Video.
With peak car buying season coming up, one thing you want to think about is how does that affect your insurance? So a couple recommendations we have is make sure you're always reviewing your policy. Whether you're adding a new vehicle, adding a driver, or just updating your coverage overall, you want to make sure that you're reviewing your coverage and the price. One way to do that is to consult an independent agent because they can help you navigate the tricky insurance buying process. The second thing is how do you become more insurance savvy? So a couple recommendations we have is to understand some of the basic terms. The first one is deductible. That's the amount of coverage that you pay before your coverage kicks in. And it's important to keep in mind that the higher deductible you take, the lower your premium is. But remember, if you do have a claim, that's the amount that you're gonna be paying. So you wanna make sure it fits within your budget. The second term is premium, and that's what you pay for the coverage that you're getting. One way to find an independent agent is to go to agent.travelers.com and find a local agent near you.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic.
I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe here with you all this week, and thanks for sticking with us through this hour of the program. And we are joined for this final segment by Steve Gorham. He is Executive Director of the Climate Science Coalition of America and author of 4 books on energy, climate change, and sustainable development with over 100,000 copies in print. His latest book is Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Steve Gorham, happy to talk with you today. How are you?
Hey, Joe. I'm doing great. Great to join you.
Yep, glad to have you. So the U.S. Department of Energy, they just issued a report now saying that climate change may not actually be as catastrophic as we've been hearing all along. They have 5 leading scientists point out, quote, CO2-induced warming might be less damaging than commonly believed, and that mitigation policies could be more detrimental than beneficial. Though I could have told you that when they're talking about simultaneously getting us all onto solar power and then blocking out the sun.
Yeah, it's a big shift from the Biden administration, of course. And Secretary Chris Wright commissioned this paper in March of 2025 to 5 skeptical scientists, John Christie, Judith Curry, Stephen Koonin, Ross McKittrick, and Roy Spencer. Roy Spencer is actually a little bit of an advisor of mine. But they accepted the job on the condition that there would be no editorial oversight by the Department of Energy or any other government group. So they wrote this paper, and as you mentioned, they found out that the climate models overstate the situation with warming. They found out that they were not getting more hurricanes or storms, and they're not stronger. They found out they mentioned that carbon dioxide is great for plants, and so it's really quite a shift from the Biden administration.
Yeah, it's a polar shift from, so to speak, what really climate scientists have been saying for how many years now, and hearing it from the Department of Energy. Actually, there was a lawsuit that came out last week against the Department of Energy for changing up policies and stuff. I guess they're really concerned about what's going on.
Yep. Well, the big impact here is in part from the EPA. And the head of the Environmental Protection Agency, Administrator Lee Zeldin, has announced he's going to be repealing the 2009 endangerment finding, the EPA in 2009 under the Obama administration found that greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide were endangering citizens of the United States. So they're going to be using this report. Mr. Zeldin's going to be using it to try and roll back this finding, and as you say, this is going to be sued as well. It's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court, probably in a couple of years. But it really is a big shift, and it's a, in my opinion, a move back to more sensible energy and science than what we've seen in the past.
Yeah, because we've just been having kind of fear-based mandates as opposed to reasoned-out science gradually guiding us towards any kind of green energy future. Instead, it's been way overhyped what the effects are going to be. And it's almost like if you don't overhype it, then you're not treated as a legitimate scientist, even if you have data to the contrary.
Yeah, Chris Wright has pointed out you know, they're taking all the, well, let me just mention what Zeldin says here. He said that they created this endangerment finding, and then they're able to put all of these regulations on vehicles, on airplanes, on power plants, and regulate a lot of things out of existence, hurting our economy, costing Americans a lot of money. He's also going to argue in front of the Supreme Court that the EPA has overstepped its regulatory authority. The EPA gets its authority to regulate pollution from the Clean Air Acts and the various versions, 1970 and others. And they don't mention carbon dioxide. They don't mention greenhouse gases. So I think the Supreme Court is eventually going to find that they're going to strike down the 2009 thing, and they're going to say, Congress, if you want to regulate these, you need to pass a law to do so. So really a big, big shift.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually it just occurred to me why couldn't this have been done earlier? 14 years is a long time for something that oversteps the bounds of the Clean Air Act. And if there's nothing specifically in the Clean Air Act about what they're regulating, then how come no one prior to now had challenged it? And, you know, I guess that goes to the general groupthink that's going on in the scientific community about climate change, where who would challenge it at the risk of their profession?
Well, that's true. It's a thing you need to go. You're going against the grain. We did have both the Obama and the Biden administrations that were very pro trying to control the climate, which it's just not clear that can be done. And during the first Trump administration, he was battling this Russia hoax forever, and so there really wasn't much effort. But now we have all these cabinet members and administrators marching in the same direction, pushing back against this. So it's going to be quite a fight, and I think it's going to be better for the U.S. economy and for U.S. citizens.
Mm-hmm. And with, I guess, the scientific community being downstream from the government providing grants for it, what impact will this have on future climate science now that a bit more skeptical of a mindset is being introduced?
Well, this is also part of what Mr. Trump has been doing. He's been basically rolling back climate science in the administration since his first executive orders in January, cutting funding at NASA, for example. The latest push is that NASA should be doing space exploration and not climate science. So they're asking for about 50% cut in their budget in fiscal year 2026, I believe. That still has to go through Congress. Same with NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And both of these groups had climate computer groups that were doing this computer modeling. And the funding for those is being cut as well. But then we have all sorts of grants that are going out from the Department of Energy that are being canceled, from the EPA that are being canceled. And so it's there's a lot of people wailing and gnashing teeth about this. But Mr. Trump and his advisors are trying to move back to solving problems with real pollution in the air and the water, and not this idea that carbon dioxide is a pollutant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, carbon dioxide is kind of what we need in order to exist. I mean, humans exhale it, so you know, would that effectively, if the Clean Air Act allowed the regulation of carbon dioxide, would they be regulating people?
Yeah, it's crazy. And you saw an article the other day, I think, that where they said they were complaining that dogs for pets were big greenhouse gas emitters.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, but you're right. Every person exhales about 2 pounds a day into the atmosphere. We burn sugars in our bodies, and so we exhale carbon dioxide. And CO2 is one of the three substances essential for life on Earth. Carbon dioxide, oxygen, and water are the thing. Water vapor are the things that allow life to occur. So the idea that we've been calling it a pollutant is just crazy, and a lot of that is based on this 2009 endangerment finding, which they're going to roll back.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve Gorham, I appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe Show to talk about this. And again, listeners, this book is titled Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And we're coming up to the failure of this program to continue, because we're done with you for the day. We're done with you for this hour. And so sorry to leave you all, but we'll be back next weekend. In the meantime, our website is MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.